Welcome to Brad Golf Podcast, a podcast for the average golfer. My name is Dermot Bradfield and golf is in my blood. Join me as I fumble my way around this fascinating sport. Okay, welcome back to Brad Golf. We had a week off, but this is the 21st of October, 2020. And this is episode 21 of the Brad Golf Podcast Series. This week, we're going to recap on the last 2 weeks. So the Shriners, the CJ Cup and the PGA. And we'll have a look at the BMW and Scottish Championship back home in Europe. We'll also, for this week, have a look at Nigel's picks for the Zozo Championship. We'll discuss current events on the PGA Tour. Most of the focus, though, will be back at home and what's happening to golf in Ireland right now. As usual, please do subscribe to the podcast. You'll find Brad Golf on many podcast platforms, including Anchor, Google, Apple, Spotify, and others. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. You find Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and bradgolf.ie on Facebook. As usual, you can contact us via email at bradgolftv@gmail.com. So let's get this party started. Nigel, welcome back. We both took the week off last week. Well-earned break, so we've a bit of catch-up to do. How are you keeping?
Very good, Dermot. How are you?
I'm not bad at all. So what if I used to put you on the spot straight away, I'm not even going to let you sit down and get settled. I'm going to ask you, what was your highlight in the last 2 weeks of golf since we parted ways? What was your highlight? Either on the tours or maybe you got a two on the 8 blue. I don't know. What was it? What was your highlight in golf in the last 2 weeks?
Well, I haven't played much in the last while. In terms of watching golf, I haven't watched a whole lot. I've been taking a break from all that sort of stuff. For yeah. My highlight, I guess I watched some of the Scottish Championship on the weekend. I thought Adrian Otegui was very impressive.
He was, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think he 10 birdies in his last round. I think it was interesting to see the golfers playing in such cold conditions, you know.
Such a contrast. Wrapped up.
So it was a bit of a change from the short sleeves and the beautiful weather that they normally play in.
Yeah, it was such a contrast between the two tours to see, you know, on the same day, seeing lads wrapped up and other lads out in T-shirts. So it was a very, very, very different kind of setup on the Sunday, that's for sure. Well, the whole weekend. For me, my highlight was the 37 on the yellow 9 on Sunday.
Where very good.
I think I hit every fairway. I wasn't far off on every green. It was a boring 37. I was looking back at it going, yeah, I didn't do much exciting on it, but I just didn't make any mistakes, particularly off the tee, which put me in great position. So yeah, that was in the first day of the Winter League. And the pressure was on. I was the low man. We'd only three players for the start of the Winter League. So I was the low man. I was playing with both partners. So if I played badly, we played badly, put it that way. Fortunately, I didn't. Mm. That was my highlight. Although there was a few other things in watching golf as well, which we'll come to in a moment. So let's start with, if you don't mind, Shriners. So we had, well, Scotland's Laird wins his fourth PGA Tour win. He's second at Shriners. He stumbled home, bogeyed the 72nd. All he needed was a par to win it outright. Bogeyed that to go into a three-way playoff. And even then, he was kind of clinging on for the first two holes of the playoff and eventually won. What did you make of his victory over in the PGA Tour?
I think he was impressive. It's kind of a little annoying for me to have seen him win because I tipped him up. He was one of the more outsider sort of tips from, it's probably nearly a month ago now. I'd seen him appear on a few leaderboards and I think I caught him on some of the coverage and he was playing well and some other people had noticed his stats were improving. And he, in that particular week that I tipped him up, he got cut in from 300 to 150 to 1. Yeah. And then had a top 20 or top 30 the following week after that. And he was trending nicely. And it seemed to me that he was playing well and then falling off a bit in the weekend. But then in Vegas, he's a former winner in Vegas from 2009. He just came out of the traps all good and firing from Thursday right through to Sunday. Deserved to be the champion because he nearly, as you said, he nearly threw it away. He made a great up and down at 17. Also, it has to be mentioned, his his whole bunker shot on the 10th. He basically had a plug lie in the bunker and just kind of did a kind of controlled splash out that rolled in. And that kind of, that was really what won the tournament essentially, because it gave him a bit of a breathing space going into back nine, which he kind of needed because he was stumbling towards the end. He was very tight on the 18 when he bogeyed to get into playoff. And you'd have to think that Matthew Wolf was the kind of favourite at that stage. But, you know, he held a lovely birdie on, I think it was the second or third playoff hole to win it. So he deserved champion. Very impressive. He's kind of a bit like... Martin Laird is essentially based in the States now. He's as good as American rather than Scottish. And he's kind of like our Seamus Power.
I was thinking exactly the same.
So,
yeah, great win for him there. And if we move on to the BMW Championship then. So we had Tyrrell Hatton. I've written down here in my notes, Tyrrell Hatton, he didn't have his hat on. Wait, see what I did there? He didn't have his hat on. He had a hoodie. So before I go into his victory and how many victories he's had and his great run of form, the hoodie, Nigel, is a big talking point in golf at the moment. And I suppose it's not just the hoodie itself, but it is dress codes at golf clubs around the country, around the world. Clubs have various different dress codes, as they're entitled to have. I'll state that straight away, because golf clubs are, in many cases, members-owned, and they can set... They can set rules for participation at their golf clubs. And dress codes is one that many golf clubs do have. The hoodie, Nigel, what's your view on it for golf? And we might expand it out from hoodies then, but what did you make of, I suppose, this whole question about hoodies?
I was kind of wondering why. I had no problem with the style of clothing. I just didn't understand why he was wearing it, because it doesn't really... It almost kind of gets in a bit, and I would have thought it would have got a bit distracting to have it there when you're on your backswing. I didn't mind the way it looked. It kind of looked different. I suppose he's a young man. He's trying to be cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to take off. It kind of sparked a lot of debates about what is actually, you know, allowable or tasteful on a golf course. I don't think that's too bad. I think, I suppose jeans and tank tops probably wouldn't really be what should be worn on a golf course, but I don't know. But
tracksuits
and
Man United jerseys and things like that. I mean, there's a line that we have to figure out in golf, that's for sure. And I think for me, there is a line somewhere. I thought it was actually, as hoodies go, it was a very respectable hoodie, right? There are hoodies that are less respectable. I thought it was a respectable hoodie. I've seen some brilliant, beautiful, actually, FootJoy hoodies there the other day, and I thought, oh my God, I'd love to get my hands on one of those. I wonder how much of this was him and his fashion, and how much of this was actually his sponsors, because it did seem like, for me, it just felt like there was an overemphasis on the hoodie. Now, obviously, he was winning, so there's going to be a lot of attention on him. But I wonder how much of this was the sponsors. That's question number one. Number two, then, is, I suppose, in recent year or years, I have a feeling the PGA have relaxed a little bit with regards to shorts, for example. So shorts has always been something that, and at least on the PGA Tour, have been a no-no. But they've opened that up in the recent year or so, I think, in practice rounds that you can play in shorts. And that ultimately is starting that conversation about whether shorts would be acceptable on the PGA Tour. They're acceptable at your average golf club once they are not, again, soccer shorts or Speedos, which Nigel likes to wear when he's playing golf, that they're respectable.
Or not. Or like those kind of, you know, 80s GA shorts that you love.
Exactly. I suppose there's a number of conversations happening in golf, at the moment as to what's acceptable. And then in about a week ago, Ewan Porter was asked to change his black socks at Sydney Golf Club in the last couple of weeks there. So black socks with black shoes is a no-no at Sydney Golf Club. You have to wear white socks with black shoes. So what do you think of that, Nigel?
Well, that's gone a bit too far now. You know, I think there's, you know, a baseline of respectability, but then there's a kind of a sort of an anal retentive attitude as well.
Yeah.
If you're going to get into what people's socks are wearing, I mean, no, I think that's a bit much. I think I'd heard about that story before. I actually thought it was fake news.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm someone who likes a bit of color on the golf course. I've been known to wear ridiculous colors combinations at times. And for me, I like to express myself through color. So if I like wearing different color socks, if at all possible, with my shoes.
I always thought you got dressed in the dark.
There's a bit of that too, Nigel, let's be honest about it. There's a bit of that too. I think golf clubs need to have a sit down over the coming months, particularly now that golf is changing so much in these COVID times. I think golf clubs need to sit down and have a look and review their dress code policies, because we need to make the game inclusive. We don't want to create barriers for the sake of creating barriers, like having black socks or white socks. I mean, there's a line, though, that we do need to draw in the sand. I agree. Tank tops and jeans, I'm not sure about. Man United jerseys, or Liverpool jerseys for that matter, I'm not so sure I'm comfortable with that either. But should you have to wear a collar, Nigel? What's your line on that? What about a collar or no collar?
Collar isn't compulsory, no. It's just kind of more of a tradition for me, anyway. Well, since Tiger's come up out with his, you know, that kind of, I don't know what sort of blade kind of cut or blade turtleneck, whatever that style is, and is that he was wearing when he won the Masters last year. I mean, that's not a polo or a collared shirt, so I'm sure that'd be fine, really, in most clubs. That sort of thing is. I don't think this is really a major issue for clubs, but you're right. You can't really relax it too much.
Yeah.
Where, you know, lads are turning up as if they just fell out of bed or are just taking the kind of piss a bit. So
yeah,
you need to have some sort of baseline, but you can't be too strict.
That's true. And I think at least conversation's happening in golf now, and it has been for the last, you know, I suppose, couple of years about dress codes. And I think it's important, and it needs to happen, because golf has opened up. It is a different world to what we would have had in the 80s and 90s. Golf has opened up. It's a more inclusive sport. So I think it needs to move with those times and distinguish between what are traditions and what are values in the sport, and figure out a way forward. Yeah. So I think clubs do need to review that, particularly if they're looking to attract new members and so on. Yeah. So that for me was a big talking point. I mean, obviously seeing Tyrrell out there in his hoodie was interesting. I also thought the same, and I agree with you. I'd find that distracting, in much the same way as you'll rarely see me in a golf course wearing waterproof leggings. So that's something you won't see me doing too often. In fact, if I know it's going to be raining really badly, I'm not going to play, right? But if I am playing, I kind of feel like, look, I'm going to get wet. That's going to happen. So I've good trousers that will keep me somewhat dry, but I prefer to get a little bit wet than to wear big, huge leggings that move around. And in much the same way as with jackets, I don't like big, heavy jackets when I'm trying to swing the golf ball. I prefer to get a little bit wet. So I found the same when I was looking at him with the hoodie on. It's like, surely that's in his way. It's got to get into his eye line at certain points of the swing. So, yeah, I wonder how, but there you go. He pulled it off. It was his third Rolex.
Yeah, it was a great victory.
His third Rolex, fifth European Tour success. He's now moved into the top 10, 28 years of age for the first time in his career. And leaking a little bit now into the CJ Cup, did exceptionally well at the CJ the following week, having moved across the ocean and finishing third place. He's on form, isn't he?
Yeah, he's on a serious roll. I mean, he was first round leader at the CJ Cup on the following Thursday after coming from Wentworth straight to Vegas. He kind of ran out of steam on the weekend. Still finished, so I think he might have finished with 65 on Sunday. So he is, you know, red hot. The problem with that is when players get like that, their odds come tumbling down. So you have to wonder whether a guy can keep that going.
Yeah.
At, I think he might be, just for the record, I think he might be 16 to 1 for this week. No, 20 to 1. 20 to 1.
There was a bit of an there.
Bad.
I heard that.
Not too bad.
Yeah, that could be interesting. Yeah, so a man in Rich.
But you'd have to think, I just think he's a little, he's still a young man. He can keep rolling, but I don't know if he can do it this week.
Well, let's see. The CJ
Cup. More about that later.
Yeah, big time. And then for the CJ Cup, well, Jason Kokrak, I mean, such relief for the man, right? Now, to be fair, he's won, what, $15 million worth of prize money. He's kept his card every year, so, I wouldn't lose too much sleep for the guy. But as they said in the fried egg, no one beats Jason Kokrak 233 times in a row. Shot his 64 in the final day.
That's a good one.
64 in the final day. He's won his first PGA title. Were you delighted for him, Nigel, or how did you feel about the whole weekend?
I wouldn't say I was delighted for him. I don't think he really comes across as a likable sort.
Maybe not a character.
I think he hits a mean ball.
Yeah.
A mean ball. He is a bit of a character, but, up to now, I'd always thought he was a bit of a journeyman as well.
Yeah.
So he's disproved that a bit. He's now a winner on the tour. There was a key fact that I would have loved to have known about beforehand is that he's actually played the most rounds there of anyone who played last week. He's an MGM ambassador. And MGM are the casino that owns the course. So he's played 25, 30 rounds there. He treats it like it's his home course almost.
Yeah.
So he was a... In retrospect, he was a red-hot prospect.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still got to be done. Like, he drove the ball unbelievably, and his putting stats were incredible.
Well, that was the big difference.
Not like him, because he normally can't putt.
Exactly. He's rarely inside the top 100 in putting. So, and that week, he was, he was in the top three. So that made the difference for him, which was great to see. So despite being three back, he obviously he held off Xander and won the title. So, yeah, such a relief, I would imagine, for him to have, broken that 233 times run, which was turning out to be a PGA Tour record as well. So at least he's put that aside. Okay,
a huge check as well.
Yeah, so what was his final check?
$2 million.
$2 million. I mean, also he gets into the Masters.
Was it nearly $2 million? Yeah.
Gets into the Masters.
Oh,
gets his card for the next 2 years. I mean, it's all good. It's all good in the Kokrak house this weekend.
Yeah.
The Scottish. So you mentioned him earlier. His win, Adrian, 1-4, quite impressive. But there was someone for me, and I watched the whole weekend, and there was someone I couldn't take my eyes off. And he's just been on incredible form since the Irish Open, where he finished in second place, went on to win the week afterwards in Scotland. And he's finished third again this weekend at Scottish Championship. Aaron Roy, I'm just loving the guy. Loving the way he strikes the ball, loving his attitude towards golf and life as well. He's got a lot of publicity, a lot of interviews. Sky Sports were out there talking to him every 2 minutes if they could. But I'm absolutely loving the guy. He's not on social media. He's in his 20s, 25, I'm going to say. He's not on social media. And he's in a rich vein of form. I'd love to see him go over and play in the PGA Tour for a while to see how he could get on. Did you pay any attention to him over the weekend? Or over the last couple of weeks, Nigel?
Yeah, he's been on some unbelievable run of form. Loves playing in Scotland, obviously.
Yeah.
Because that's third place goes along with a Scottish Open victory.
Yeah.
And I think I said this a couple of weeks ago. I've watched him play since the Euro Pro Tour days. And he worked up through the Challenge Tour and onto the main European Tour. And then he got his first victory in Hong Kong. And then now he's a Rolex Series winner with the Scottish Open victory and regularly contending for championships. So, yeah, he's no reason he can't go over to the States and compete.
Yeah. So I've been enjoying watching him, yeah, I must say. And he's someone I'm going to root for now, I think. Just the person as well. I like the person that's there behind it.
He seems like your sort of player, He's got the hoods and the irons, wears two gloves. He's definitely
Right up my alley, Nigel.
If someone had asked me who's Dermot, you know, who Dermot's type of player do you like, I'd say, yeah, it's Aaron Roy.
Aaron Roy or Bryson, either one. Yeah, I agree. Tell us, we're going to move away then from the last couple of weeks of golf, and we're going to go into other news, be it local and abroad. But there's really only one starting point with this, and that is level 5 restrictions in Ireland and what that's going to mean for golf. So as of right now, just to set the scene for everyone at home who's listening, it's officially, even though we said this is the podcast of the 21st of October, it's officially 9 o'clock the night before. So it's 9 o'clock on the 20th of October, that is Tuesday the 20th. And at this moment in time, the GUI have not confirmed what's going to happen with golf. The government have confirmed we are moving to level 5 restrictions until the 1st of December in Ireland, which is, you know, for want of a better word, a lockdown. We've got 5K restrictions on movement, which is, I suppose, it's limited to just necessary event or necessary journeys only. But that does include fitness related movement. So you can leave your home for fitness related events, but you have a 5K restriction, and that's in place until the 1st of December. The GUI have yet to confirm their stance on whether golf clubs can open or not. I know in Wales at the moment, golf clubs are being told to close. In Northern Ireland, golf clubs are open. It's different across the UK, but in Ireland, we are still unsure. The GUI have not confirmed. Nigel, what's your take on the current situation with the level 5? Where do you see it potentially going? What are some of the options here?
Well, as I said, there's still not been an announcement from the GUI and on the Irish Times site. They're still saying that golf clubs are waiting to hear what's going to happen if they're going to stay open. Obviously, we're biased. We'd love them to stay open. I think the natural social distancing that goes with golf means it's got an inbuilt advantage for in these COVID times. So I don't think it should change too much, but the level 5 restrictions say you can't move outside of 5 kilometers from where you live. That's gonna basically stop me going to the golf club. It's gonna stop a lot of other people. It's gonna, in a very, especially down the country, that's gonna be a massive factor. We had this problem before when they relaxed their restrictions in phase one.
That's right, yeah.
They had this similar 5 kilometer limit. It was a real gray area then. And, you know, it was kind of, there was a lot of blind eyes turned to whether people turned up or not.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, followed the rules, some people didn't, but there wasn't really that much of a problem, and it was felt that we were getting on top of the situation. But now with over 1,000 cases a day and talk that they're going to penalise people who break that rule, I can't see the golf clubs opening. This goes along with the other point where other sports have been told that you can only train individually. The likes of, you know, local soccer clubs and GA clubs can't have matches. I don't think in that sort of environment and the lack of political clout that the GUI have, that they can persuade the government to kind of make an exception for golf.
Yeah. So just to bring people back in time a little bit, so we go back to May, and as you said, we moved out of complete lockdown into phase one of the relaxing that we had across the summer to move us out of a lockdown. Back then at phase one, it was a 5K restriction. Golf clubs could open, but they could not run competitions. So the along similar lines to what they're taking at the moment, in my opinion, is that by it not being competition golf, it was being treated as a person out training or a person out just playing a bit of golf, but not playing competitively, not playing with teams and things like that. So that's how they were kind of able to sneak, well, not sneak, but how they were able to get golf in over the line in phase one at the time, which was that it was going to be non-competitive, no cards, no team competition, just you're out playing a bit of golf. Now, like anything else, when you play golf, you play with other people, but it is socially distanced, so that's not an issue and there's no contact. So I think that remains the same. So for me, I'd be surprised if golf isn't made available in the current level five restrictions, but under the conditions that no competitions would be allowed. That would be my take on it. But in saying that, the GUI have known about this now for 24 hours. It's been confirmed that we've been level five for 24 hours. It's also been known for, I would say, at least a week that we were heading to level five sooner rather than later. So this isn't something that has just come out of nowhere for the GUI. It's something that has been coming down the tracks for some time. And not just the GUI, but also Sport Ireland, who ultimately determine what's going to be allowed across the various different sports. And the GUI then have to issue these directives out to clubs. But right now, here we are. The GUI said last night that they would reveal all to clubs today to allow them one day, just one day, to make the various plans and do the various things that are necessary at golf clubs around the country. And here we are at, what, 10 past nine on the day before these restrictions come into place, and the GUI have not given any update. And I think that is outrageous. If you're going to say, we're going to give you an update, give an update. But they haven't. They left most clubs sitting today, actually, without any update all throughout the day until about 9 o'clock, I think. I'm going to say 2 hours ago. They just responded by saying, like other sports, GUI and the ILGU remain engaged with Sport Ireland regarding the impact of the new restrictions due to come into effect tomorrow night. Clubs will be advised of the outcome as soon as possible. So that's changed from what it was yesterday, which was yesterday they were saying they would give us an update today. And now they're saying, as soon as possible, we'll let you know. There's a lot of frustration out there from members, from golfers, from golf clubs, as to how the GUI have handled it. They should have learned, in my opinion, from a previous screw up, which was, basically on a Friday evening, when every golf club was closed down, to tell golf clubs, oh, by the way, you can't have competitions. With very little notice, it looks like something very similar is going to happen here in golf. And you said it, clout. The GUI have very little clout with Sport Ireland. And clearly, they're on a waiting list to talk with someone in Sport Ireland about what this means for golf in Ireland. And the GUI are just, clueless, maybe, with regards to what they can do. But am I being overly harsh there, Nigel?
Well, I'd say that you are being overly harsh there. And I think that they're not clueless, really. They just don't have any power compared to the likes of the GAA, the RFU, the FAI wouldn't have as much power as they used to. They're a bit of a joke of an organisation at the moment. But Sport Ireland, don't look to the GUI or the ILGU as the first organisation to kind of contact. The GAA essentially have the strongest voice, given that they're in every parish pretty much in the country. The reason back in June, when we were supposed to get competitive golf back in phase two, when they were opening up restrictions, I believe that it was the GAA's influence that stopped that happening. They had representation along with the RFU and other bodies on the particular committee that made that decision. There was no golf representation on that committee. I don't believe that's changed in the situation at the moment. I don't think it should be a criticism that they're waiting until the very last minute to let clubs know. I think clubs know it's not going to happen. I think if you were running a club at the moment, you'd be preparing to close, essentially, because.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot are
the strict guidelines are laid out in level five. It's not going to happen, really.
Yeah,
it's a shame, but I just can't see them making an exception for golf because, as you said, they don't have the political clout within government. And also, in the wake of the Golfgate scenario, I think golf has a bad image when you link it with government. And governments don't want to be making, exceptional decisions for golf which will only invite criticism, because they invite enough criticism as it is. So
yeah,
I just don't think it's going to happen.
That's a very good point. A very, very good point. So while I would disagree with it in one sense, it's a powerful statement in what you said there. Government can't really link themselves to making an exception for golf on the back of what has happened over the summer. But on the other side, why I don't agree with it from a purely aesthetics point of view is that these were hotel issues rather than golf issues, particularly Golfgate. It was the collection of people in the hotel that was really the issue, rather than people playing around the golf, even though that didn't look the prettiest. But I agree with you. I think the government, to make an exception for golf, to allow golf, will just allow a lot of people back on that bandwagon to say, what is this government
at? Exactly.
So that's a very fair point.
And I think they're already making an exception for sport in allowing elite sports to play, in allowing the Interclub Championship in GAA to happen, allowing the internationals, the remaining Six Nations internationals to happen, the women's soccer, which is later this week. I know Ireland will have the Irish soccer team, the men's team will have internationals in November. They should be allowed to go ahead, probably Pro 14 maybe in the rugby. But that's, you know, that's the sort of level. I'd say they probably allow horse racing as well.
Of course they will, yeah.
But that's it. You know, it's top level stuff that's on TV, that's entertainment as well.
The Winter League is serious. Like, it's serious stuff at Donabay Golf Club. It is, you know. Yeah, no, I hear you. The only thing there I might say is the Irish gents soccer team should be, you know, should be locked down, full stop, because they can't score. So I think that would be, I think there's a valid case for them to be locked down for a couple of months.
True enough.
Till we can find someone who can score a goal. So yeah, look, it's got an interesting, I suppose, couple of weeks ahead of us, I should say, until the 1st of December. The question really remains, do we get golf or not? Even if we do, there'll be a 5K restriction. And as you said, that means for, particularly down the country, the vast majority of golfers are not going to be able to get to their golf club. In fact, to their local golf club, particularly out in the country, down in Colchitown. But in our own club, you know, there's a mix. You know, there's some people outside of the 5K and some are not. Obviously, you won't be able to get to your local club. And so that's going to affect the average golfer, let's be honest. That's even if they do open with 5K. For myself, personally, I have great news, Nigel. My flight scope arrived on Friday. It was almost as if the guys in America said, we need to get this one over to Dermot pretty lively. They're heading towards lockdown in Ireland, so he needs this flight scope pretty quickly. So I'm officially simulated up in my shed. On Saturday was the first day I put it to use. So I didn't want to overdo it. It was a bit like a range day. I took 150 balls on Saturday evening, because I was working on Saturday, I couldn't golf, as my prep for Sunday. And I tell you what, it paid off. I played very well on Sunday, but I'm loving it, Nigel. Absolutely loving it. The FlightScope Mevo Plus, incredible statistics, really accurate. The projection is fantastic. It looks really impressive. I presume you've used at either a range or at one of the various different sports shops. Have you used any of those devices like a TrackMan or FlightScope before?
No, I'm old school.
Old school.
I haven't used them now. I intend to do some work with that though in the winter, because, you know, you might as well use the technology rather than using the guesstimates or whatever. I hit the 6-iron, whatever, 170 yards usually, whatever. It's best to know what you do actually hit it and the spin rates, et cetera, et cetera.
So that's a big one for me, is the distances. But and second biggest thing for me is the side spin. So that is an issue for me. There's no doubt is I generate side spin, and that has such a negative impact. But I have to say, from the hour and a half to 2 hours I was out there, I was really able to kind of adjust my technique ever so slightly and see the impacts on spin, whether it's side spin or actual spin. On smash and so on, I could see on slight adjustments what it was affecting in the numbers, and that's really useful, because when you're in the range and you're trying those things, it's about feel. It's kind of, oh, that felt better than the other thing I did, but you don't really know what the result is, not to much accuracy anyway. And that's something that I feel can make a big big difference for me. So I'm looking forward to putting that to use over, well, particularly until the 1st of December when we get back to the golf club, or if we get back even this year. So I'll be putting that to use. Nigel, are you 5K from my house?
I know. I think you're over the far side of Donabate.
Bad news, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. Must get my own set up here.
Yeah, well, look, I definitely would recommend it. I actually, at one stage, I turned off the lights. So it was in the evening. Turned off the lights to see if the sensor could pick up my striking of the ball. Because with the lights off, now there was a tiny light in the corner, which was just casting a tiny little bit of light towards where I was. But it was, for the most part, relatively dark. I could see the ball. So that meant from a contact point of view, I was able to focus. But it was relatively dark. And I did that so I could see the projector as it's best, which it right. really was, and the sensor picked it up as good, if not better. You put these little metal stickers, one metal sticker on your ball, not at the striking point, but facing away from impact, and it picks up yeah. that through the laser. So it works just as well with the lights off, which I thought was pretty impressive. But yeah, the Mevo Plus, I'll be doing some reviews and talking to you about it as the weeks go by. Moving on from lockdown, and let's hope that, you know, This lockdown is a pretty quick turnaround for us, and we're not sitting here on the 1st of December worrying about the next 2 months, and hopefully that we're coming towards the 100 number that they're looking for. 100 a day is something that would be more manageable. Hopefully that's where we get to. But if we move away from the lockdown, the world number one in golf has COVID. Now, this is big news, and it doesn't seem to be getting the coverage. It's almost like the PGA Tour are ashamed to mention it, or that it... I don't know. I'm not seeing the coverage, but the world number one has COVID. So Dustin Johnson has withdrawn from the Zozo. Obviously, he withdrew from the CJ at the weekend. His agent has said, look, unfortunately, Justin just made the decision to withdraw from Zozo. While he's feeling much better, he's still a bit low on energy and feels it would be best to wait and resume his schedule in Houston. What's your view on this news story?
Yeah, it's big that the world number one gets COVID, but anyone can get COVID, you know? You know, it's I guess when after a couple of weeks ago when Trump got COVID, I think when Dustin Johnson gets COVID, it's probably not going to be that much of a story, you know.
Yeah.
And that the fact that he misses a couple of tournaments, you know, really isn't that much of a big deal. It's going to affect his preparation for the Masters in terms of what the PGA have done or not done in terms of making statements. And there's a bit of history here, especially with Dustin, because Dustin got an unofficial 6-month ban for recreational drug abuse before. It was never publicized, but basically that's what happened. He made a statement at the time saying he was, you know, taking a break from the game for personal reasons or for to kind of work on a few things. But really, it was an unofficial ban from the PGA Tour. I think he was fond of a certain recreational drug.
Yeah.
And also, they've done bans as well on lower key players. I know that Robert Garrigues got a 3-month ban for cannabis use, which is a bit silly, really, because it's legalized in a lot of places. Matt Every's gotten a few fines as well in relation to stuff like that. They don't tend to publicize things that create bad PR. They're absolutely allergic or hypersensitive to bad PR because they really have a neurosis or a real massive insecurity about the PGA Tour's general image and professional golf's image as being kind of squeaky clean and all about charity and et cetera, et cetera. It's infuriating in a way because it creates a bit more color and it makes them a bit more real such.
Yeah.
But that's just the nature of the PGA Tour.
Just like Bryson, they're protecting their brand. There's no doubt. So in other news again, so I'll go a bit more local this time. So vandals have caused 20K worth of damage to Ashburn Golf Course. A further 10K of damage was caused to golf buggies used in the incident. So Gardaí are appealing for information in this space. These scumbags, for want of a better word here, they used two golf buggies, were taken from the back of the club and they were used to perform handbrake turns and donuts around the course. My understanding is that it was around the 8th and the 9th holes. Fortunately, not on the greens. So it looks like they didn't do damage on the greens, but lots and lots of damage around fairways and close to the greens. So around 30K worth of damage, course and bogeys. So that's obviously difficult, particularly for a country club like that, Ashburn is as well, and leading into a lockdown as well. That's not the kind of stuff that you need from a golf club. So what's your take on that, Nigel?
Well, I hadn't really heard much on that, but it's that's pretty disgraceful, all right. You know, you're, I guess, you know, vandalism is vandalism. It can happen to a golf club. It can happen to a tennis club. It can happen to a GAA club. You know, when it happens, it serves nobody. It's just mindless stuff. Yeah. Hope it recovers. I guess the fact that we're going into a lockdown now, they'll have time to
From a course point of view, they have time to recover, that's for sure. Yeah. And the time of year as well, I think, for recovery of a course, that's probably the time that you'd like it to happen if you're going to be forced upon it. Yeah. So, I feel for their members at the moment anyway. But as you say, with lockdown, that might be just the right time for recovery. To move on then to Rules Corner. So out of news and into Rules Corner, I do need to make a correction. A couple of weeks ago, Nigel, we were talking about WHS, which is the new World Handicap System, and I did mention that winter golf, I would placing, would count towards your 20 cards. Now, that was based on research that I performed on, in particular, Golf England's website, where they have information about the new WHS system. Now appears, based on information I've seen on GolfNet, and when I dug a little bit deeper on this, at GolfNet, that if there's placing throughout the course, including the rough, for example, then it does not count as one of your 20. So in much the same way as we had qualifying competitions before, your 20 cards that will be used for handicap purposes must be qualifying. Now, that's not the term they use anymore, but it must, at worst, placing in the fairway. But if you've placing in the rough, it will not count as one of your 20. So that's unfortunately not the change that I thought it was going to be. So a bit of a correction there.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, please do.
Those 20 cards, are they your last 20 cards of the old system?
So last 20 cards, full stop. So it goes back, they will count back to the year 2018. So the 1st of January, 2018. So all of the 18 year, all of 19's year and all of 20's year. So it will go back as far as it needs to go to get 20 cards. Now, if it doesn't get 20, if you've only played, say, 3 times in each of those years, so that comes to 9 cards, it will do an approximate calculation, which they have warned is not going to be as accurate. The more cards you have, the more accurate the system is. But your 20 cards, it's across those years. So if you have played 25 times this year, Nigel, it will take your last 20.
Okay, good. And it doesn't matter whether you were playing home or away?
It doesn't, yeah. So wherever it was qualifying, so technically qualifying, now you'll see there's a code that's used. If you're looking on GolfNet, there's usually a code next to your score which tells you, it's like a 3-digit code or something like that. If it has a Q in it, then it's qualifying. But typically, any competition that you've played in where you may have got a 0.1 or you got cut, that would be one of your 20 cards. If you played in a competition where there was no 0.1s applied, then it will not have counted towards your 20 cards. Mm. So it does include opens. You know, it includes, you went off to Baltray, didn't you, for the Scratch Cup. That's going to count as one of your 20 as well.
Yes. These all count.
So I have a question for you now. Well, I have two, in fact. So at the moment, it's 2-2. Nigel, you've got 2 correct, 2 incorrect. You're on the balance. So I've got another 2 questions for you today. So under the new WHS system, Nigel, oh, that's unfair because these isn't in play yet, but I'm going to hit you. Could 4-ball and match play count for your handicap in the new system? So in other words, you play me in the final of the Andy Doherty, which you won 2 years ago. Isn't that right? 2 years ago, I want to say.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
We played in the final of that. Could that count towards handicap? Or not even a final. We played in the first round. Actually, you beat me that year you won it, didn't you? I think you beat me on the way.
In the quarter.
So that was the big match, really, let's be honest, the quarterfinals. So you beat me there. Could, in the new system, that count for handicap?
Yes, it does count.
Correct.
Or it is possible. Can count.
Yeah, it is possible.
You can play a stroke play, or you can have a stroke play score count in the middle of a match.
Yeah. In fact, for your 20 cards, you see, some of them can be Stableford, so where you scratch holes. So you're entitled to scratch holes. So therefore, in match play, if you say to me, look, I'll give you that, then you can give it to me. So yes, they do count. It is possible. They do say it may be introduced once the system has settled in. So they're going to give it some time before you'll be able to actually do that. The same is true four ball, for example. So if we're playing four ball together, we can record both our scores for handicap purposes. So if we decide, you know what, let's put in our handicap score for today, we can play four ball. We can pick up. If I've played seven shots, I'm not going to get any points in the hole. I can pick up. I scratched a hole. Same as in a Stapleford competition. So,
but the key point, though, is that you, with this new system, you have to declare or register that this round is going to be counting towards your handicap.
That's very important.
If it's outside of a normal qualifying competition.
Absolutely. You're very right. And actually, this raises a really interesting thing now, which is for the first time in Ireland, if Nigel plays in a society event out in Portmarnock, he can inform Portmarnock when he gets there. There'll be a sign-in system with these clubs, but he can inform them that he wants today's society golf to count for handicap purposes, and he can register a score. There's going to be an app for this, so he'll actually at the club register an intent to play, or actually via an app. The plan is that it'll be via an app, and then he'll be able to enter his score after the event. He's expected to do it ASAP after completing the round, and that will count then towards his handicap. Same is true if he's on green fees. So if Nigel and myself go out to Portmarnock to pay green fees, we can also register intent. But you need to do it before you play, as you say, Nigel. You can't decide after 8 holes that you're going to use it. You also can't decide after 10 holes, oh, bloody hell, I'm not going to use this either. Once you express an intent to use it, you must use it. So, yeah, very good. Very important point. So you're up to 3-2. You're in the lead. So next, does a higher slope rating indicate a difficult course? Yes or no?
Yes, it does.
Oh, so close, Nigel. So it's back to 3-3. That was a trick question. Now,
it does. It's a kind of, the slope rating is to do with the difference between a scratch player and a bogey player.
Correct. So it's
basically between scratch and up to 20. Correct. And that kind of indicates what the general scoring would be.
So that's the slope rating. Yeah, it's the course rating that indicates the course difficulty. It was a trick question. In fairness, the way they phrased it makes you go that direction. This is straight from the GOI website where they have their FAQ questions. Yes, you're absolutely right in what you said. The slope rating is actually an indicator between the scratch player and the bogey player who are, as you said, over 18 handicap. It's the course rating which indicates course difficulty.
Slope rating would really give an indication as well. It's just that's not its primary function.
You're trying to get half a point here, Nigel. You're not getting it. You're not getting it. 3-3. It's 3-3. Good try. But yeah, look, I think it is. A lot of people are saying this new system, it's just a changeover. It's fairly simple. There is going to be a bedding down period, and it is going to take golfers a while to get used to the new system because there's slope ratings, there's course ratings. You know, what is your handicap on the day? Is it your computer handicap or is it your course handicap? It's going to take a while for people to get used to it. There's no doubt about it. A bit like the new rules to golf. It's not a simple transition. And it'll be grand. You just sign in and you'll get a handicap. It's not as simple as that. You do need to understand some of the technicalities in the handicap system. It's going to take us a while.
I wouldn't envy any handicap secretary next year.
Yeah. In fact, this year's handicap chairman at Donabate Golf Club has had a horrific year in that we've had more new members than probably ever before in the history of the club. So he has a lot of handicaps that he's had to issue. And when you've a lot of handicaps to issue, you know, you only need to get one bad handicap issue in 100 and the whole club are at you, right? So he's had a really tough job there. He's done incredibly well, in my opinion. The second thing is that on the plus side is that there is no handicap review. So there's no annual review to do, which is a big piece of work. I can tell you that as someone who's done it before. That's not an hour's work, believe me. I sat with Mark Mackey on two handicap reviews, and you're talking 4 or 5 hours of getting stuff together, and then you have phone calls and emails with the GUI. One phone call I had lasted over an hour, and countless emails to verify and validate what your handicap review is. That's all gone by the wayside, so there is some gains there, but on the negative side now is the amount of questions there's bound to be from members as we move into November, December, January. But I agree, yeah, next year's handicap chairman is going to have some job, that's for sure. Right.
But just explaining everything to the members is going to be, they're going to have questions about whether, oh, I'm too low, I'm too high, or what happened, why did I change from this to this?
Yeah.
And you'd need to be going around with information leaflets and say, listen, to read that.
Yeah.
Because it'd be a nightmare.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's watch this space. We'll have more WHS next week. I think we have to discuss it. It's the 2nd of November, just to remind people. 2nd of November, we're going
live. I think we could nearly do a whole pod on it, really, because it's... I can understand the reason for it. I think the old system is better, but I'm biased.
Yeah, it will not get rid of the issue. In fact, it may well increase the issue around sandbagging. As they call it in America.
Various sandbagging or banditry will only get worse, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And
essentially at the moment, right? And I'm not saying within the rules of golf at the moment in Ireland, you can put in a supplementary score, right? But let's be honest about it. 99.9999% of scores that are input for a person's handicap in Ireland over the last 5-10 years have been competition scores, not supplementary. So I would say if you can find one in your golf club in the last 10 years that was a supplementary score, I'd love to hear about it. Whereas now, and what that did create was, if I wanted to get a shot back, if I wanted to get 10.1s back, right, because the captain's prize is coming up in 3 months' time or whatever, and I want to get 10.1s, I have to go out and play in 10 competitions. Now, that is an expense, right? I have to, the entry fee could be, let's say, a fiver at your club. That's £50 I have to pay in competition entries just to get myself a shot back. So there was a bit of work involved to get one back. Under the new system, I don't need to pay in any competitions. In fact, I can go to my local golf club, go down with Nigel, the two of us go out on a Thursday afternoon, we play 18 holes, we both score 95, and we put that card in. We do that, Thursday, Friday, whatever is necessary to get our handicap, to get rid of that 20th score or whatever it might be out of my system, particularly if my 20th score was a 64 or something like that. I think we're definitely going to see more of that. It's going to be easier for people to do that than ever before. I think it's a bandit's dream, this. So I agree with you in that respect. Okay, maybe we'll do an advance piece on that next week or the week after. I think it's definitely worth it. For now, let's move on to the Zozo. I think we're going to break a record today on time. Your picks for the Zozo, Nigel?
All right, quickly, the Zozo Championship, which was inaugural championship, was last year in Japan. The idea about this tournament was supposed to be PGA Tour's foray into the Japanese market. Zozo is a Japanese clothing brand. It all went very well for the sponsors last year when Tiger made it to 82 PGA Tour victories with a emphatic win. This year, due to COVID, it won't be in Japan. They've moved it to Sherwood Country Club, which is in Thousand Oaks in California. That'll probably fit in with the Japanese market in terms of time zones. It's a course that's held many tournaments before. It used to host Tiger's World Challenge from 2000 to 2013. It's also held 4 or 5 Champions Tour events since then. The nature of the course is it's quite a long course, but it's actually quite strategic. Bent grass greens have been put in the last few years, and it actually doesn't favor any one type of player, really, because in the past you've had Jim Furyk win it twice, you've had Graham McDowell win it twice, Zach Johnson's won it along with Tiger many times, and a few other big hitters like Vijay Singh. But generally, it's you need to be a straight hitter and a solid iron player. There are various different chances this week. You know, Tyrrell Hatton, as we mentioned before, is a very good, you know, chance to win it this week. If I just go through quickly the picks, because we are running on a bit here. I've gone for Patrick Cantlay as the headline pick, 28-1, 2 points each way. Cantlay was going great at the Shriners 2 weeks ago, and just really had a very poor Sunday round. You would think he was two or three over when he looked like the favourite to win it. He seemed to have a very average tournament last week in the CJ Cup, but he finished with a 67. He seemed to have gotten out of the slump that happened from Sunday to Friday, it seemed. So 28-1 is a very good price for a player that I think is in better form than the scores would suggest. He's a California native himself. He knows the course well. And I just think he's overvalued, or overpriced, should I say, undervalued. Abraham Anser is the second pick at 50-1, a point each way. Got him at 50-1 2 weeks ago when he got me in each way in Vegas when he came fourth. So I think it's good that he's kept his price. He was pretty solid last week at the CJ Cup. And he is a fairways and greens type of player. If his putter gets hot, he's going to challenge and go very close this week. So he's 50-1. Third pick is Brendan Todd, 70-1, a point each way. Brendan, again, is not the biggest hitter in the world, but, you know, he doesn't miss many fairways, hits a lot of greens. And if he's been watching golf over the last few months, he's put himself into contention a few times, probably faltered a bit down the stretch, but it's not for his, you know, standard of putting. It just sometimes the nerves get to him. I think he's improving that way. He's already won twice in the season last year, and it was around this time of year. So I think this course is going to suit him, and the time of year that we're playing at, I think, is important as well. The fourth pick is Justin Rose at 90-1, also a point each way. I can't believe Justin Rose is 90-1. His form has been very patchy. He had an all right start at Wentworth there a couple of weeks ago, but then went missing. Didn't play last week, I don't think. He's over, you know, back in the PGA Tour to try and, you know, find some game. I just think 90-1 is just huge for a major champion. He's played the course before when it was the Tiger World Challenge. So I think that course knowledge, along with a big price, is just too much to turn down. The last two picks are outsiders, two Asian players. First of them is Takumi Kanaya, a Japanese player. He was formerly, only about a month ago, less than a month ago, he was number one amateur in the world, and he's turned pro. And I think, I haven't been able to find out for sure, but I think this is his first professional tournament. So I'm going to go with him, more in hope than anything else, that he can show that his amateur career, where he was, I think he was the Asia Pacific amateur champion. He's played at Augusta before, and just to show that sort of amateur pedigree can translate into professional. It doesn't always. A lot of time it doesn't. But we're taking a punt on him this week at 200-1, half a point each way. And the last is our Thai friend, Jaz Janawathanand, at 300-1, half a point each way. Jaz has been all over the world playing golf, but recently he played in Ireland and went very close to winning. 300-1, I think, is well overpriced for a guy. He just was in the top 50 of the world only a couple of months ago. So we'll stick with him at 300-1. So the six selections are Patrick Cantlay, 28-1, 2 points each way. Abraham Anser, 50-1, a point each way. Brendan Todd, 70-1, a point each way. Justin Rose, 90-1, a point each way. Takumi Kanaya, 200-1, half a point each way. And Jaz Janawathanand, 300-1, a half a point each way.
Fantastic. Thank you, Nigel. Particularly liked Anser there. He did well last week. I'm surprised he's at 50-1, if I'm honest with you. So he's one I'd probably put a little bit extra on. I just have a feel for him. I think you're right as well. Justin Rose at 90-1, former major winner at 90-1. It's impossible to.
And he's still the Olympic champion.
As he does like to remind us, indeed. Great. Well, thanks, Nigel.
There are other players as well. I mean, John Rahm will go number one in the world, I think, if he wins. And Justin Thomas, you know, plays well these sort of tournaments, but I don't know. They're all very short.
10-1, 11-1 kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Rory's about the same.
Shocking value. Just 12-1. Shocking. Shocking value. Yeah.
At the top of the market, maybe Colin Morikawa, given his approach play is so good, might be probably, in my mind, he would be the favourite, along with Tyrrell Hatton. But again, Tyrrell, I think maybe he's a little bit over-golfed. The travelling may catch up with him. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's why I thought I went with the value play of Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah, good call. Right, well...
I'll have these tips up on the website, up on trickydogleg.com. They'll be available tomorrow. And I'll also have a couple of picks for the Italian Open on the European Tour.
Fantastic, yeah. So trickydogleg.com. Please do check them out tomorrow. Yeah, the Italian Open will be one of interest there as well for anyone who wants to put a few bob. Super. So Nigel, obviously this weekend of golf now is a bit of a no-go for you. So, you know, do you have any short-term plans as to what you're going to do golf-wise between now and the 1st of December? Let's say they allow golf, but within 5K, is there something you can do?
Well, I think I've looked at the map. Clontarf Golf Club's up the road.
Okay.
Don't know if they'd let me in. I think the radius encompasses, I think, the 1st and the 18th of Royal Dublin. I'm not sure. So
you might be able to sneak in.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not.
I don't know. I'm not too worried about it. I'd said to myself that this was kind of the end of the season anyway. I know the Winter League is coming in, but, you know, the Winter League is so unpredictable in terms of whether the, you know, the weather is there, how many are there for the team. You know, it's a bit of fun, really.
It is. And I don't think you'll miss the cold, wet mornings either, where sometimes in Winter League you have to turn up because you're in contention and, you know, the weather is going to be miserable, but you have to turn up for the team. So I don't think we'll miss that side of it. So yeah, I think rather than the lockdown we had in kind of April and May, that was horrendous because the weather was so nice and we were looking out going, such beautiful golfing days that were being lost. I don't think we'll have the same problem this time around.
No. That was more frustrating, I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I agree with you there. Most golfers are of the view that, you know what, it's not the worst time in the world for us to be locked down from golf, but it will get frustrating, there's no doubt. Such is the world we live in. Right. Well, Nigel, thanks a million. We'll catch up again next week, hopefully with loads of money after this weekend's golf. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Take care.
See you soon. Take care, everyone.
So just to confirm, this podcast is not sponsored in any way. All views expressed in this podcast are my own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever with which I have been, am now, or will be affiliated. Please do subscribe to the podcast, Brad Golf TV. You'll find me on Spotify, Pocket Casts, Google, etc., etc. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. It's Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. On Facebook, you'll find me at bradgolf.ie. And you can also drop me an email at bradgolftv@gmail.com. Looking forward to hearing from you in the weeks and months ahead. You've been listening to Brad Golf Podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please do come back soon and join me for another round.